9. I could have saved time by hiring a cab to jump me to Riverside, but I was handicapped by lack of cash. I was living in West Hollywood. The nearest 24-hour bank was downtown at the Grand Circle of the Ways. So, first, I rode the Ways downtown and went to the bank for cash. One real improvement I had not appreciated up to then was the universal checkbook system. With a single cybernet as clearinghouse for the whole city and radioactive coding on my checkbook, I got cash laid in my palm as quickly there as I could have gotten it at my home bank across from Hired Girl, Inc. Then I caught the express way for Riverside. When I reached the sanctuary, it was just daylight. There was nobody there but the night technician I had talked to and his wife, the night nurse. I'm afraid I didn't make a good impression. I had a day's beard, I was wild-eyed, I probably had a beer breath, and I had not worked out a consistent framework of lies. Nevertheless, Mrs. Larrigan, the night nurse, was sympathetic and helpful. She got a photograph out of file and said,
"Is this your cousin, Mr. Davis?"
It was Ricky. There was no doubt about it. It was Ricky. Oh, not the Ricky I had known, for this was not a little girl, but a mature young woman, 20-ish or older, with a grown-up hairdo and a grown-up and very beautiful face. She was smiling. But her eyes were unchanged, and the ageless pixie quality of her face that made her so delightful a child was still there. It was the same face, matured, filled out, grown beautiful, but unmistakable. The stereo blurred. My eyes had filled with tears. "Yes," I managed to choke. "Yes, that's Ricky." Mr. Larrigan said,
"Nancy, you shouldn't have shown him that."
"Pooh, Hank. What harm is there in showing a photograph?"
"You know the rules."
He turned to me.
"Mister, as I told you on the phone, we don't give out information about clients. You come back here at 10 o'clock when the administration office opens."
"Or you could come back at 8, his wife added. "Dr. Bernstein will be here then."
"Now, Nancy, you just keep quiet. If he wants information, the man to see is the director. Bernstein hasn't any more business answering questions than we have. Besides, she wasn't even Bernstein's patient."
"Hank, you're being fussy. You men like rules just for the sake of rules. If he's in a hurry to see her, he could be in Brawley by 10 o'clock. She turned to me. "You come back at 8. That's best. My husband and I can't really tell you anything anyhow." What's this about Brawley? Did she go to Brawley? If her husband had not been there, I think she would have told me more. She hesitated, and he looked stern. She answered, "You see Dr. Bernstein. If you haven't had breakfast, there's a real nice place just down the street." So I went to the real nice place, it was, and ate, and used their washroom, and bought a tube of Beard Go from a dispenser in the washroom, and a shirt from another dispenser, and threw away the one I had been wearing. By the time I returned, I was fairly respectable. But Larrigan must have bent Dr. Bernstein's ear about me. He was a young man, resident in training, and he took a very stiff line. "Mr. Davis, you claim to be a sleeper yourself. You must certainly know that there are criminals who make a regular business of preying on the gullibility and lack of orientation of a newly awakened sleeper. Most sleepers have considerable assets. All of them are unworldly in the world in which they find themselves. They are usually lonely and a bit scared, a perfect setup for confidence men." But all I want to know is where she went. I'm her cousin, but I took the sleep before she did, so I didn't know she was going to. "They usually claim to be relatives." He looked at me closely. "Haven't I seen you before?"
"I strongly doubt it, unless you just happened to pass me on the ways downtown. People are always thinking they've seen me before. I've got one of the 12 standard faces, as lacking in uniqueness as one peanut in a sackful.
Doctor, how about phoning Dr. Albrecht at Sawtell Sanctuary and checking on me?" He looked judicial. "You come back and see the director. He can call the Sawtell Sanctuary. Or the police, whichever he sees fit." So I left. Then I may have made a mistake. Instead of coming back to see the director and very possibly getting the exact information I needed, with the aid of Albrecht's vouching for me, I hired a jump cab and went straight to Brawley. It took 3 days to pick up her trail in Brawley.
Oh, she had lived there, and so had her grandmother. I found that out quickly. But the grandmother had died 20 years earlier, and Ricky had taken the sleep. Brawley is a mere 100,000 compared with the 7 million of Great Los Angeles. The 20-year-old records were not hard to find. It was the trail less than a week old that I had trouble with. Part of the trouble was that she was with someone. I had been looking for a young woman traveling alone. When I found out she had a man with her, I thought anxiously about the crooks preying on sleepers that Bernstein had lectured me about and got busier than ever. I followed a false lead to Calexico, went back to Brawley, started over, picked it up again, and traced them as far as Yuma. At Yuma, I gave up the chase, for Ricky had gotten married. What I saw on the register at the county clerk's office there shocked me so much that I dropped everything and jumped a ship for Denver, stopping only to mail a card to Chuck telling him to clear out my desk and pack the stuff in my room. I stopped in Denver just long enough to visit a dental supply house. I had not been in Denver since it had become the capital. After the 6 weeks' war, Miles and I had gone straight to California. And the place stunned me. Why, I couldn't even find Colfax Avenue. I had understood that everything essential to the government was buried back under the Rockies. If that is so, then there must be an awful lot of non-essentials still above ground. The place seemed even more crowded than Great Los Angeles. At the dental supply house, I bought 10 kilograms of gold, isotope 197, in the form of 14-gauge wire. I paid $86.10 a kilogram for it, which was decidedly too much since gold of engineering quality was selling for around $70 a kilogram, and the transaction mortally wounded my only $1,000 bill. But engineering gold comes either in alloys never found in nature, or with isotopes 196 and 198 present, or both, depending on the application. For my purposes, I wanted fine gold, undetectable from gold refined from natural ore, and I did not want gold that might burn my pants off if I got cozy with it. The overdose at Sandia had given me a healthy respect for radiation poisoning. I wound the gold wire around my waist and went to Boulder. 10 kilograms is about the weight of a well-filled weekend bag, and that much gold bulks almost exactly the same as a quart of milk. But the wire form of it made it bulk more than it would have solid. I can't recommend it as a girdle. But gold slugs would have been still harder to carry, and this way it was always with me. Dr. Twitchell was still living there, though no longer working. He was professor emeritus and spent most of his waking hours in the bar of the faculty club. It took me 4 days to catch him in another bar since the faculty club was closed to outlanders like me, but when I did, it turned out to be easy to buy him a drink. He was a tragic figure in the classic Greek meaning, a great man, a very great man, gone to ruin. He should have been up there with Einstein and Bohr and Newton. As it was, only a few specialists in field theory were really aware of the stature of his work. Now, when I met him, his brilliant mind was soured with disappointment, dimmed with age, and soggy with alcohol. It was like visiting the ruins of what had been a magnificent temple after the roof has fallen in, half the columns knocked down, and vines have grown over it all. Nevertheless, he was brainier on the skids than I ever was at my best. I'm smart enough myself to appreciate real genius when I meet it. The first time I saw him, he looked up, looked straight at me, and said, "You again?"
"Sir?"
"You used to be one of my students, didn't you?"
"Why, no, sir, I never had that honor." Ordinarily, when people think they have seen me before, I brush it off. This time I decided to exploit it if I could.
"Perhaps you are thinking of my cousin, doctor, class of 86. He studied under you at one time." "Possibly. What did he major in?"
"He had to drop out without a degree, sir. But he was a great admirer of yours. He never missed a chance to tell people he had studied under you." You can't make an enemy by telling a mother her child is beautiful. Dr. Twitchell let me sit down and presently let me buy him a drink. The greatest weakness of the glorious old wreck was his professional vanity. I had salvaged part of the 4 days before I could scrape up an acquaintance with him by memorizing everything there was about him in the university library, so I knew what papers he had written, where he had presented them, what earned and honorary degrees he held, and what books he had written. I had tried one of the latter, but I was already out of my depth on page 9, although I did pick up a little patter from it. I let him know that I was a camp follower of science myself. Right at present I was researching for a book, Unsung Geniuses.
"What's it going to be about?"
I admitted diffidently that I thought it would be appropriate to start the book with a popular account of his life and works, provided he would be willing to relax a bit from his well-known habit of shunning publicity. I would have to get a lot of my material from him, of course. He thought it was claptrap and could not think of such a thing, but I pointed out that he had a duty to posterity, and he agreed to think it over. By the next day, he simply assumed that I was going to write his biography, not just a chapter, a whole book. From then on, he talked and talked, and I took notes, real notes. I did not dare try to fool him by faking, as he sometimes asked me to read back. But he never mentioned time travel. Finally, I said, "Doctor, isn't it true that if it had not been for a certain colonel who was once stationed here, you would have had the Nobel Prize hands down?" He cursed steadily for 3 minutes with magnificent style.
"Who told you about him?"
Doctor, when I was doing research writing for the Department of Defense, I've mentioned that, haven't I?"
"No."
"Well, when I was, I heard the whole story from a young PhD working in another section. He had read the report, and he said it was perfectly clear that you would be the most famous name in physics today if you had been permitted to publish your work."
That much is true.
"But I gathered that it was classified by order of this colonel, Plushbottom?"
"Thrushbottom. Thrushbottom, sir. A fat, fatuous, flatulent, foot-kissing fool, incompetent to find his hat with it nailed to his head. Which it should have been."
"It seems a great pity."
"What is a pity, sir? That Thrushbottom was a fool? That was nature's doing, not mine."
"It seems a pity that the world should be deprived of the story. I understand that you are not allowed to speak of it."
"Who told you that? I say what I please."
"That was what I understood, sir, from my friend in the Department of Defense." That was all I got out of him that night. It took him a week to decide to show me his laboratory. Most of the building was now used by other researchers, but his time laboratory he had never surrendered, even though he did not use it now. He fell back on its classified status and refused to let anyone else touch it, nor had he permitted the apparatus to be torn down. When he let me in, the place smelled like a vault that had not been opened in years. He had had just enough drinks not to give a damn, not so many but what he was still steady. His capacity was pretty high. He lectured me on the mathematics of time theory and temporal displacement. He didn't call it time travel, but he cautioned me not to take notes. It would not have helped if I had, as he would start a paragraph with,
"It is therefore obvious,"
and go on from there to matters which may have been obvious to him and God, but to no one else. When he slowed down, I said, "I gathered from my friend that the one thing you had not been able to do was to calibrate it, that you could not tell the exact magnitude of the temporal displacement."
"What? Poppycock! Young man, if you can't measure it, it's not science."
He bubbled for a bit, like a tea kettle, then went on,
"Here, I'll show you."
He turned away and started making adjustments. All that showed of his equipment was what he called the temporal locus stage, just a low platform with a cage around it, and a control board which might have served for a steam plant or a low-pressure chamber. I'm fairly sure I could have studied out how to handle the controls had I been left alone to examine them, but I had been told sharply to stay away from them. I could see an 8-point brown recorder, some extremely heavy-duty solenoid-actuated switches, and a dozen other equally familiar components, but it didn't mean a thing without the circuit diagrams. He turned back to me and demanded,
Have you any change in your pocket?
I reached in and hauled out a handful. He glanced at it and selected 2 $5 pieces, mint new, the pretty green plastic hexagonals issued just that year. I could have wished that he had picked half fives, as I was running low.
Do you have a knife?
Yes, sir.
Scratch your initials on each of them.
I did so. He then had me place them side by side on the stage.
Note the exact time. I have set the displacement for exactly 1 week, plus or minus 6 seconds.
I looked at my watch. Dr. Twitchell said,
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, now.
I looked up from my watch. The coins were gone. I didn't have to pretend that my eyes bugged out. Chuck had told me about a similar demonstration, but seeing it was another matter. Dr. Twitchell said briskly,
"We will return here 1 week from tonight and wait for one of them to reappear. As for the other one, you saw both of them on the stage? You placed them there yourself?"
"Yes, sir."
"Where was I?"
"At the control board, sir." He had been a good 15 feet from the nearest part of the cage around the stage and had not approached it since.
"Very well. Come here."
I did so, and he reached into a pocket.
"Here's one of your bits. You'll get the other back 1 week from now."
He handed me a green $5 coin. It had my initials on it. I did not say anything because I can't talk very well with my jaws sagging loosely. He went on,
"Your remarks last week disturbed me, so I visited this place on Wednesday, something I have not done for, more than a year. I found this coin on the stage, so I knew that I had been, would be, using the equipment again. It took me until tonight to decide to demonstrate it to you."
I looked at the coin and felt it. "This was in your pocket when we came here tonight?"
"Certainly."
"But how could it be both in your pocket and my pocket at the same time?"
"Good Lord, man, have you no eyes to see with? No brain to reason with? Can't you absorb a simple fact simply because it lies outside your dull existence? You fetched it here in your pocket tonight, and we kicked it into last week. You saw. A few days ago I found it here. I placed it in my pocket. I fetched it here tonight. The same coin, or to be precise, a later segment of its space-time structure, 1 week more worn, 1 week more dulled, but what the Kanai would call the same coin, although no more identical in fact than is a baby identical with the man the baby grows into. Older."
I looked at it. "Doctor, push me back in time by 1 week." He stared angrily.
"Out of the question."
"Why not? Won't it work with people?"
"Eh? Certainly it will work with people."
"Then why not do it? I'm not afraid. And think what a wonderful thing it would be for the book if I could testify of my own knowledge that the Twitchell time displacement works."
"You can report it of your own knowledge. You just saw it."
"Yes," I admitted slowly, "but I won't be believed. That business with the coins, I saw it and I believed it, but anyone simply reading an account of it would conclude that I was gullible, that you had hoaxed me with some simple legerdemain."
"Damn it, sir!"
"That's what they would say. They wouldn't be able to believe that I actually had seen what I reported. But if you were to ship me back just 1 week, then I could report of my own knowledge."
"Sit down. Listen to me."
He sat down, but there was no place for me to sit, although he did not seem aware of it.
"I have experimented with human beings long ago, and for that reason I resolved never to do it again."
"Why? Did it kill them?"
"What? Don't talk nonsense."
He looked at me sharply and added,
"You are not to put this in the book."
"As you say, sir."
"Some minor experiments showed that living subjects could make temporal displacements without harm. I had confided in a colleague, a young fellow who taught drawing and other matters in the School of Architecture. Really more of an engineer than a scientist, but I liked him. His mind was alive. This young chap,"
It can't hurt to tell you his name. Leonard Vincent was wild to try it, really try it. He wanted to undergo major displacement, 500 years. I was weak. I let him.
Then what happened?
How should I know? 500 years, man! I'll never live to find out.
But you think he's 500 years in the future?
Or the past. He might have wound up in the 15th century, or the 25th. The chances are pretty even. There's an indeterminacy, symmetrical equations. I've sometimes thought... No, just a chance similarity in names.
I didn't ask what he meant by this because I suddenly saw the similarity too, and my hair stood on end. Then I pushed it out of my mind. I had other problems. Besides, chance similarity was all it could be. A man could not get from Colorado to Italy, not in the 15th century.
But I resolved not to be tempted again. It wasn't science. It added nothing to the data. If he was displaced forward, well and good. But if he was displaced backward, then possibly I sent my friend to be killed by savages, or eaten by wild animals.
Or even possibly, I thought, to become a great white god. I kept the thought to myself.
But you needn't use so long a displacement with me. Let's say no more about it, if you please, sir.
As you wish, Doctor. But I couldn't drop it.
May I make a suggestion? Huh? Speak up.
We could get almost the same result by a rehearsal.
What do you mean?
A complete dry run, with everything done just exactly as if you were intending to displace a living subject. I'll act out that part. We'll do everything precisely as if you meant to displace me, right up to the point where you would push that button. Then I'll understand the procedure, which I don't quite as yet. He grumbled a little, but he really wanted to show off his toy. He weighed me and set aside metal weights just equal to my 170 pounds.
These are the same scales I used with poor Vincent.
Between us, we placed them on one side of the stage.
What temporal setting shall we make? He asked. This is your show.
You said that it could be set accurately?
I said so, sir. Do you doubt it?
Oh, no, no. Well, let's see. This is the 24th of May. Suppose we... Oh, how about, say... 31 years, 3 weeks, 1 day, 7 hours, 13 minutes, and 25 seconds.
A poor jest, sir. When I said accurate, I meant accurate to better than 1 part in 100,000. I have had no opportunity to calibrate to 1 part in 900 million.
Oh! You see, Doctor, how important an exact rehearsal is to me, since I know so little about it. Suppose we call it 31 years and 3 weeks. Or is that still too finicky?
Not at all. The maximum error should not exceed 2 hours.
He made his adjustments.
You can take your place on the stage.
Is that all?
Yes, all but the power. I could not actually make this displacement with the line voltage I used on those coins, but since we aren't actually going to do it, that doesn't matter.
I looked disappointed and was. Then you don't actually have what is necessary to produce such a displacement? You were speaking theoretically?
Confound it, sir, I was not speaking theoretically.
But if you don't have the power...
I can get the power if you insist. Wait.
He went to a corner of the lab and picked up a phone. It must have been installed when the lab was new. I hadn't seen one like it since I was awakened. There followed a brisk conversation with the night superintendent of the university's powerhouse. Dr. Twitchell was not dependent on profanity. He could avoid it entirely and be more biting than most real artists can be when using plainer words.
I am not in the least interested in your opinions, my man. Read your instructions. I have full facilities whenever I wish them. Or can you read? Shall we meet with the president at 10 tomorrow morning and have him read them to you? Oh? So you can read. Can you write as well? Or have we exhausted your talents? Then write this down.
Emergency full power across the bus bars of the Thornton Memorial Laboratory in exactly 8 minutes. Repeat that back.
He replaced the instrument.
People.
He went to the control board, made some changes, and waited. Presently, even from where I stood inside the cage, I could see the long hands of three sets of meters swing across their dials, and a red light came on at the top of the board.
Power,
he announced. Now what happens?
Nothing.
That's just what I thought.
What do you mean?
What I said. Nothing would happen.
I'm afraid I don't understand you. I hope I don't understand you. What I meant is that nothing would happen unless I closed this pilot switch. If I did, you would be displaced precisely 31 years, 3 weeks.
And I still say nothing would happen. His face grew dark.
I think, sir, you are being intentionally offensive.
Call it what you want to. Doctor, I came here to investigate a remarkable rumor. Well, I've investigated it. I've seen a control board with pretty lights on it. It looks like a set for a mad scientist in a grabby spectacular. I've seen a parlor trick performed with a couple of coins. Not much of a trick, by the way, since you selected the coins yourself and told me how to mark them. Any parlor magician could do better. I've heard a lot of talk, but talk is cheap. What you claim to have discovered is impossible. By the way, they know that down at the department. Your report wasn't suppressed. It's simply filed in the screwball file. They get it out and pass it around now and then for a laugh. I thought the poor old boy was going to have a stroke there and then, but I had to stimulate him by the only reflex he had left, his vanity.
Come out of there, sir! Come out! I'm going to thrash you! With my bare hands, I'm going to thrash you!
The rage he was in, I think he might have managed it, despite age and weight and physical condition. But I answered,
"You don't scare me, Pappy. That dummy button doesn't scare me either. Go ahead and push it."
He looked at me, looked at the button, but still he didn't do anything. I snickered and said,
"A hoax, just as the boys said it was. Twitch, you're a pompous old faker, a stuffed shirt. Colonel Thrushbotham was right."
That did it.